Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
We're starting a new series this month called The Wise Heart. Sia, my beloved, she has to go to the airport, I believe. Yeah, The Wise Heart. And it's a book by Jack Kornfield, a nice Jewish guy who went to Malaysia and studied with Akin Khan and has now been teaching mindfulness Buddhism all over the country. He has a place called Spirit Rock in Northern California. And he's one of my teachers, one of my many teachers. He's very, very deep. And he talks about the necessity of the wisdom of the heart. And he starts the book off with a quote by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. It's right there at the very top. This is for you, Rocky. He says, "The practice of Buddhism is essentially the science of mind." We are the science of mind. That's what this teaching is. And Buddhism has a very clear way of expressing it, because they show you that the nature of the mind is to think, and that thoughts are the trap where we create our own suffering. And in Buddhism, they recognize in the Heart Sutra that form is emptiness, emptiness is form, so your thoughts are really empty. And when you don't believe your thoughts, when you know thoughts arise in consciousness and you don't follow them, and as Ajahshanti says, "I can't afford to believe my thoughts," when you get to that place, then the mind is no longer held bondage by your thoughts. So this launched me into this class that I've been struggling with what to teach in the fall. And I have so many. I could teach Jeff Foster, who I dearly love. I was going to teach Richard Rohr, who's this mystical Christian. But then I came to realize that Locke Kelly, in his new book, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness, he said, "I've spent my whole life studying in the East, which needs to be brought to the West, the successful way to unhook our attention from our thought patterns." You're still there, but you're no longer caught up in the tyranny of the mind. You are what he calls awake awareness. So for 10 weeks, it's practice after practice after practice. And Greg reminded me, the way to get anywhere is through practice, is these gentle techniques of unhooking yourself from your thoughts. Then he says the goal of all of that is what he calls a liberated attention. You're still fully attentive, but you're liberated from the tyranny of your mind. Now, what's interesting is the world basically lives in its pain body. Turn on the local news. And if any of you are watching news and you're addicted to it, turn it off. Give yourself only a little bit of it, because what that's doing is that's hooking you, hooking your attention so that it isn't liberated, so that it's hooked. It's hooked in opinion and judgment and suffering, and that's not freedom. So then, once you establish yourself in this effortless mindfulness, and Jack Kornfield, he teaches mindfulness, he talks about the medicine of mindfulness, and it truly is medicine, but so much of that is deliberate mindfulness. I studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, and you learn the mindfulness teachings. What if it's effortless? You're not the doer. It's a natural state of being. Now, my beloved husband of, we just had our third anniversary, even though we've been dating for 47 years. But anyway, I guess that's what you call it in this world. We're now legal. And I suggested that he take the class. He says, "Why would I take a class if I'm married to you?" And that's probably absolutely true. But he does live in the mind. And his mind is very concerned. I'll use that word, concerned about a lot of things. And so he'll say to me, "So what do you think about that, David?" And I say, "I don't." "Well, what do you think about that, David?" "I don't." "Well, what do you think about this recycling thing and how they're really screwing it up?" "Well, I don't think about that." "What do you mean you don't think about that? You have to think about that. We have to control these things. We have to be concerned about these things. How are we going to change things if we're not unhook from thought. Things will still get done in their right and perfect way. It doesn't mean you don't take action, like the beautiful walk that Mark is talking about for mental illness or rescuing an animal at the Humane Society. So, yeah, so I'm... I've got, you know, I'm still struggling with these new eyes. I have these reader glasses, and they're awkward for me because when I put them on, you're all fog. But then when I look down, things are clear. So I'm having to look up and down, and it's kind of disoriented. But Richard Rohr, this beautiful mystic of the Franciscan order, he talks about the necessity of moving from the head into the heart. You know, it says in the Bible, it says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." So here's this Franciscan monk saying, when we learn to see with the heart, and this is how he put it. He put it in a beautiful way. He said, authentic prayer is invariably a matter of both emptying the mind and filling the heart, and often one naturally follows the other. So be still my mind, be open my heart. And to do that, you normally have to move beyond recited, formulaic, and social prayers to bring the mind down into the heart, or he says, even to bring the heart up into the mind. He said, either way will work. So it's not separate. You want them to work together so that the clear, focused, concentrated, proactive mind is resting in this compassionate, loving, all-embracing, equanimous heart, equanimous, peaceful. Anyway, either way, he said, they work. So to keep the heart space open, you almost always need emotional healing in regard to past hurts. He said, almost always. I would probably say always. We don't need to be running away from those emotional hurts that we have. Last week, I spoke to you about the weave that, to understand the weave of it all together. And I was going to share this thing that Mark Nepo wrote. He said, when all the pain that we've, and the suffering and the grief comes together in the heart, there is a fabric that's created. And when we can perceive from that fabric, we are perceiving from the wholeness of our being. Not just the Pollyanna that wants everything to be perfect, not from the pain body, but we've integrated the shadow, and the shadow then offers the light, which is right there in the shadow all along. So he says, the heart space is most commonly opened by grief. And beloved Christie's back here. I did a funeral for her mother on Friday, and I felt the grief of those two beautiful daughters, but I also felt the freedom in that grief and the beauty there. So he said, the heart space is opened by grief. It's opened by beautiful music. It's opened by conscious empathy. For those of you who don't know what empathy is, that's when you feel others. You feel their sadness. You feel their joy. You know, empathy, art, dance, nature, fasting, poetry, meditation, and above all else, the entire art and suffering of relationships. The art and suffering of relationships. Now, I don't know what that could possibly be. Do you? We tend to project out there onto others. So Jack Kornfield, in his lovely little book, The Wise Heart, he said, the goal is to arrive at a place called the awakened heart. And the awakened heart is usually a place that you get to after you first met the broken heart. Because in order for the heart to awaken, we have to have the courage to break open, not to be walled off. And so he starts his beautiful book by saying, our true nature is this awakened heart, and our true nature is love. But unfortunately, what we've done is we've put fear around that heart and fear around that love because we're afraid of being vulnerable, we're afraid of being hurt again, and so we carry this fear over our heart space so that we won't have to feel vulnerable, that we won't have to become intimate with our own selves. So that's the premise from which he starts. And he did this beautiful thing where he talked about the four radiant abodes. You know, the Buddhists, they're so technical. They're more science of mind than science of mind. The four radiant abodes that the awakened heart has, and then he had the seven factors for enlightenment that you have to go through to achieve this. And so I'm listening to Jack Kornfield's seminar last night when I was taking my bubble bath after reading his book and thinking, how can I share the wisdom of the heart in a more gentle, less Buddhistic science of mind sort of way? So he talks about the awakened heart as having four qualities. One is loving kindness. You know, we practice the loving kindness meditation here. We say, may you be peaceful. Say that. May you be happy. May you be well. May you be filled with loving kindness. And then you start, may I be peaceful. May I be happy. May I be well. May I be filled with loving kindness. And then you extend it to the we, and then you extend it to the planet, and then you extend it to the insects, and then you extend it to the four-leggeds, and then you extend it to the rainforest in Brazil. And what you're doing is you're working on yourself. It's called metta. You're building a consciousness of loving kindness that will then carry into the world. He told this wonderful story about, I think it was somewhere, I don't know where it was, somewhere in the world, this child disappeared. He had learned to walk. He was toddling out, and he was gone for 3 days somewhere in the wilderness. And they found the little child in a cave, and a mother bear who had had cubs and maybe lost her cubs was lactating. And so she was nursing the little boy. And so the question is, why would this bear not eat it? Well, the bear is a mammal. And the bear was nursing. She was a mother and the loving kindness in her. And so Jack Kornfield says, what if we knew that our nature is to be loving? And if a baby's crying, we're not going to eat it. We're going to take it to our breast and we're going to feed it. But it's a true story, but it's quite beautiful. So that was his metaphor for loving kindness. And then the second thing he said on the four great abundant radiant abodes is compassion. Compassion flowers in the heart. The Osho, the great mystic, said, if sex is the bud, he said, love is the flower. And the fragrance is compassion. So he said, could we, in this pursuit of love, move from the bud into the flower and ultimately into the fragrance? I love in our meditation room over there, we have silence is your fragrance. Wow. This awake awareness is the fragrance of the soul. It doesn't think. And so when someone says, you want to know what I think? I actually say, not really. But we can share that silence together. You know, they're in a beautiful new relationship. You know what's kept Trey and I really strong is that we go into silent time together. And then our time is really rich. We don't have to say anything. The words say everything. Have you noticed your animal doesn't speak words? And you can look into their eyes and you can feel a deep abiding love. So compassion is the second radiant abode. Joy is the third. And peace is the last one, also known as equanimity. And when we're in peace, the equanimity says everything is okay. It doesn't have to be good. We don't have to be in control. It doesn't have to be responsible. When you're in equanimity, it's all accepted. So anxiety is okay. It's okay to feel anxious. It's okay to feel doubt. It's okay to feel fear. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to deny that it's there? It shows up. And that's the equanimity. And in that equanimity, you're at peace. So beloved Christy and her sister are grieving. Isn't that beautiful? You know? And yet there's a celebration at the same time going on because mom is free. And you know, every time I do a memorial service, especially when I'm with someone who's lost their mother, it's as if I'm at my own mother's memorial service. And the equanimity and the peace comes to know that she's still with me. You know that beautiful line from the Bible, lo, I am with you always. And so what if it's not a bad thing, not a good thing, it's a thing. And when we meet that thing, you know, when you go to a hospital and you say to a person, I had a bad day or a good day, you just had a day. You just had a day. And sometimes the day is a bit of a struggle. But if you breathe into that struggle, it has a way of letting go of you because it's not real. It's the resistance to it that creates the struggle. So Jack Kornfield, he goes on then to list these seven factors of enlightenment. You're getting a lesson today. And this is on the path to the awakened heart. These are the factors that you need to attain. Aren't you ready for the Buddhist way? The first one, he said, is mindfulness. Remember, they call it the medicine of mindfulness. And they say the mindfulness training is the gateway to liberation. If you want to be liberated, move into mindfulness. So he tells a story about Jon Kabat-Zinn, this great doctor who's in the University of Massachusetts in Boston. And he teaches mindfulness training. He taught it at Omega when I was up there. And he teaches it to doctors and nurses. And so what he says at the University of Massachusetts, at the hospital, he says, bring the most troubled patients to me. And he teaches them mindfulness meditation. And in a way, their resistance starts to fall away. So could we learn a simple practice of mindfulness, which is one of the first factors of enlightenment. And the second factor, he said, is to investigate your dharma. Dharma is your truth. And to investigate it, what that's saying is, see for yourself. Gangaji always says, so look at it, inquire. Is that really true for you? We do inquiry in our satsangs, Gloryji and I, on Wednesday night. What is really true? Inquire. How does that really feel? And if you're willing to inquire into your dharma, into your truth, You know, I love that Kim's dad, he said, I used to think everybody should think the way I do. Now I realize it's okay for people to think the way they want to think. So inquire into your Dharma. Does it make sense? You know, I was a little boy who said, I can't believe that we were born in sin. I think we're born blessed. We're born pure. You know, could we inquire into the doctrine of the church? I was talking to Adam, and he was raised Catholic and then Baptist. Last week, we had a lady who said, I'm a recovering evangelical Republican. I said, good for you. She said, I believed everything they told me that was sacrosanct. And she says, now I want to think for myself. So inquire into your Dharma. Is this truth something that resonates with me at this stage of life? You know, someone told me their favorite line from the Bible was, perfect love casts out all fear. And I feel that's kind of a violent statement because I had a very fearful dog and I loved her more than anything. And I wasn't there to cast out her fear. I was there to hold her fear. I was there to embrace her fear. And then what happens? The fear just naturally lets go of itself because we're held, we're loved. So inquire into your Dharma, into your truth. That's the second factor for enlightenment. The third one, this is from the Buddha himself. The third one is energy. And the way Jack Kornfield explained energy, to be enlightened, we have to have the energy to be present with what is. Isn't that beautiful? The energy to listen. The energy to not run away when things get painful. To stand the ground. You know, when your little dog is shaking and hiding by the toilet, to get down there and to be present with her shaking body, with your open arms, and let her breathe with you and maybe find that place. So do we have the energy to be present with what is? These are beautiful things to reflect on. The fourth thing he said is, he called it, rapture. I didn't like the word rapture because of my Christian upbringing, so I changed it to bliss. But he said, could we be willing to let rapture and bliss grow within our hearts? You know, Greg and this beautiful lady, I think, are experiencing the love vibrations. So there's some rapture there. Isn't that nice? You know, I'm a big gardener, and in the fall, things are changing rapidly. And although things need to be cut back, I have these perennial begonias that have naturalized, and they're shooting up. And the leaves, when they catch the light, there's red venation from the green leaf, and the red comes through. And then these pink flowers are like little dewdrops. And you walk through the garden path, and it takes me into awe and wonder as the hummingbirds are drinking from all the different flowers. And so, you know, could I let that bliss grow in me? It has to grow within you. A friend of mine, his name was Sun, he said, a happy person will see bliss and beauty in the same place that an unhappy person sees ugliness. And then he said, I am beautiful, you are beautiful, the whole existing universe is beautiful. Ugliness is a manifestation of unhappiness. So could we let this bliss, this beauty, this rapture grow within our hearts? You know, those little revealing services on Sunday morning help my heart expand. When I hear all of you speak, I was talking to Adam, and you know, he said, I have a crush on a few people here. And I said, I have a crush on you. I have a crush on all of you, you know, because I'm having a crush on myself when I say that. You know, you're seeing yourself in each one. That's the rapture for me, or the bliss. The fifth one, the fifth factor for enlightenment, he said, is a calmness, a spacious ease. And he quoted his teacher, Akin Khan, who said, we should be able to see our calm nature as sitting by a still small pond in a forest. That is this calm nature that we get to achieve, to be still. Akin Khan also said this beautifully, and I said it at Christie's mother's memorial service. He said, here's his Buddhist teacher. He said, if you let go of something a little, you will have a little happiness. If you let go of something a lot, you will have a lot of happiness. But if you let go of something completely, you will be free. Ah. So what if that calmness, that stillness, is that place of freedom? And thoughts may come and want to stir the surface of the water, or a concern, or a judgment, or this. But to know our nature is calm, that's why we meditate. To witness that we're not our thoughts, that thoughts are empty, and that our true nature is that calmness. So that's the sixth factor, I think, of enlightenment, the fifth factor. The sixth factor is what he calls concentration. You're able to concentrate on something because your mind isn't running all over the place. And that's that liberated attention. Your attention is no longer being pulled here. It's no longer being pulled there. My teacher used to say the most valuable thing you have is your attention. So where is your attention? You know, and when the attention can move to something very simple, like Adam said, a leaf fell when he was lying on his back, and the leaf came down to greet him. And the leaf and he were having a tantric communion, leaf to Adam, Adam to leaf, right? That's that concentration. It doesn't have to be 1,000 leaves. It doesn't have to be the perfect leaf. It can just be a leaf with holes in it that the bugs eat. So could we let our concentration align into this moment to be here now with the one you're with, without an agenda, without a thought? Dogs and cats are great that way because they're empty. And to know ourselves is emptiness, right? My Zen calendar the other day said, what if existence is where we're exiled and nothingness is when we're home? There. So all of this stuff in the world, this form that drives us, that pulls us to grasp and to push away, all of that is empty. And when we realize it, then we no longer let that be cause to our suffering because we're no longer seeking it out here and we found this something within ourselves. The last factor of enlightenment, which is also one of the radiant things of whatever, is equanimity. Again, that word equanimity, where everything is allowed. Nothing is wrong. We were talking about polar opposites, and Terry was reflecting, I can have anxiety and happiness at the same time. They're not exclusive. So when we stop pushing one away and grasping at another, I want to be happy, but I don't want to be anxious. When there's equanimity and all that, there's a peace. And then whatever arises, we can meet it with mindful acceptance and love. And so that's Jack Kornfield's 7 steps. And he said, to rest in timeless space with an open heart. And then he quoted Henry David Thoreau, which I thought was interesting. He's one of my heroes. Henry David Thoreau said, planting the seeds in the garden of the heart. See, I can read this without my glasses. It's interesting. Planting the seeds in the garden of the heart, I have great faith in the seed, and I can expect wonders. Now, it's a metaphor. Planting seeds in the garden of the heart, I can have great faith and expectations of wonders. So what if we're planting in the seed in our heart the seeds of forgiveness? I forgive everyone. I forgive myself. I forgive all past experiences. Forgiving everyone. Forgiving myself. I am free. I am free. I plant the seed of peace. To be the peace that passes all understanding. In that peace, everything is accepted. Nothing is wrong. So Thoreau says, when I plant those seeds, those heavenly seeds, they begin to germinate. Now, next week, I'm going to see Jeff Foster in Colorado. So a beautiful lady, Donna Reed, will be speaking in my absence. And she is leading a group called Compassion in Action. And it's a global thing. And she's going to be speaking about how we can hold the world in compassion. And she has a big message. So I hope you'll come. But while I was in Colorado the last time, Urantia, they call themselves the Emissaries of Light. And it's an intentional living community since the 1930s. It's an amazing place. Everybody there is kind of illuminated. And they live on the land. I guess it's a commune, but they all live there. And their spiritual leader gave me one of his talks. And I had it sitting on my bureau the other day. And this is what he said. This is with the seed idea. He said, there is a core pattern to our thoughts, to our feelings, and to our spiritual nature. And for us as human beings, this core pattern at every level forms what he calls our earthly seed, this human life. And he said, we have an earthly seed, here's the seed idea, and we have a heavenly seed. And the earthly seed needs a heavenly seed. Again, metaphors, but they speak volumes. Jesus said, I speak and they do not hear, so I'm giving you the gardener's version. The earthly seed contains our potential as a human being, but it has got to be turned on by a heavenly seed. If the potentiality present in our earthly seed is not activated, it is not making any difference in our lives. Hopefully that's why you come here, to get activated by some catalyst called the heavenly seed. You know, that what you're seeking, as Ernest Holmes said, is within you. The thing you're looking for, you're looking with. This heavenly something. Jesus said, seek the kingdom of heaven. It's within you and all around you. So this heavenly seed needs to be activated within our earthly existence. So he goes on to say, that is how it works at an individual level. Then the question becomes, how do we bring the heavenly seed and welcome it into the earthly seed at every level of our human experience? How do we let it stream on through us? You know, I've shared with you Locke Kelly, the one we're going to be doing the class. He talks about awakening. And he says, this presence, this heavenly seed, this love awakens within us. It's not us that awakens, it awakens. And that's what he calls the inner awakening. Then there's a deeper awakening where we have to go through all the layers of our unhealed stuff. And then ultimately is the outer awakening where we awaken into the world where we realize it's all us, that we're not separate. We're not separate from the dragonfly or the hummingbird or the bear or the little child or the four-legged. It's all us. So he says, the heavenly seed is like a bolt of lightning that strikes our earthly heredity. And how do we welcome this bolt of lightning, this aha, this ah-so moment? He said, that's the question for us. Remember, investigating our own dharma, investigating our truth. How do we welcome this bolt of lightning? That's the question for us now. How do we create the conditions, the epigenetics that let the lightning electrify our own earthly seed? And the answer is a state of mind and a state of heart, an empty mind, an open heart. It is a prayer. It is attunement. It is all those things that generate the substance of our connection. It is meditation. And then it is a living meditation that allows heavenly seeds and earthly seeds to merge as one. Greg was saying meditation is the key in his life. What if it all becomes meditation? Meditation isn't something we do. It's the way we live. Jeff Foster's brand new book is called The Joy of True Meditation. And he talks about everything being a part of the meditation of life, where the heavenly seed and the earthly seed merge. And it's not so much us doing something to get something, but it's stepping into the moment. And he talks an awful lot about the broken heart being the open heart. And then he concludes at one stage in this book, and this is for you, Kim, because I know you love Jeff. He talks about the prayer of the awakened heart to the broken heart. Now, Christy, your heart's still broken a little, isn't it? She's in the back of the room. I love her so much. I'm sending all this love to you. And in that broken heart, the awakened heart needs to speak. So this is for you and for Mom and for your sister and for Orlando and for all of you who might have a broken heart who needs the wisdom of the awakened heart from Jeff Foster himself. He says, this is the, again, awakened heart speaking to the broken heart. I am here. I am here. And it's okay. Even though it doesn't feel okay, it's okay. And my sadness is intelligent, and my fear is ancient and sacred and worthy, and my longing burns with life. Even my doubts are my kin. Nothing is wrong here. All is held in love. Life is so short, yet love is infinite and bountiful and ever-present and closer than our next breath. So do not look for love. Do not wait for it. Do not expect it on demand. But as someone said in the revealing service, know it. Know this love. Know this presence. And be intimate with it. And feel it whispering into your ear. Again, the awakened heart speaking to the broken heart. I breathe with you now, my love. Every inhale, every exhale, and the spaces in between. And when you are on your knees, exhausted, by life's chaos and uncertainty, I kneel with you. And when you are exalted and held up high in this fickle world, I rejoice with you. And when you feel lost and you cannot go on, I've already found you. Here, here, always here, very near. I am so very near. I laugh with you. I cry with you. I bleed with you. Your blood is my blood. Your voice is my voice. Your silence is my silence. And I would go to the ends of the earth to find you, to fight for you, to bring you home. You cannot escape love. That is why you cannot grasp it. And so if I had a prayer, says Jeff, it would already be answered. The prayer and the resolution are one. The gift has been given long ago. The heart awakens when the heart is ready. So let's just close our eyes and place our hands on our heart, if you would. In the Sufi meditation, they invite you to imagine someone. It could be a human, it could be a four-legged, someone that you love, that opens your heart. And when you feel that beautiful connection in your heart, let the image of that being dissolve. and then remain in that open heart space where love has awakened within you. And you are awake to this love. And just like in the loving kindness meditation, in that heart space, bring in a friend, a colleague, maybe somebody here at the center, and feel that love begin to expand. And you are just breathing in and out and allowing for it. And now imagine that you're feeling your community, the neighbors you have that you're not particularly close to, but in this loving space, in this awakened space in your heart, you're experiencing a loving kindness toward them. Now, take someone that's a little more challenging, that might be someone you have put out of your heart. And just for now, just for the sake of this experiment, just take them in and let them rest with you, not pushing them away. Maybe they're in their pain body and it's too much for you, but just by meeting them in the open heart, there is an equanimity, a peace that you're finding. There's a compassion that's flowering. There's an acceptance that is there for you. And ultimately, there is a joy that begins to flower. The joy of being present without the need to fix or control or judge it or make it right or wrong. A natural joy of just being with the seeming suffering of the world and not have to fix it or control it or judge it in any way. It just is. And you are that beloved space of the awakened heart, meeting the broken heart and taking it in, where your head and your heart have come together and you're feeling the wisdom of this existential place that we all share, because you know it. You don't think about it intellectually. You actually know it. It's awakening within you so that it might flower and grow and ripple out into the world. Your silence is your perfume. Drink it in. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And so the heart is purified every time we enter into it. We polish the mirror of the heart through our liberated awareness, our liberated attention, through our gratitude, and through our willingness to be fully here right now in the energy of the present moment, where the one life reveals itself intimately to each one of us in our own right and perfect way, where head and heart are balanced and life unfolds in a timeless, eternal way, where every moment is sacred and we have discovered it for ourselves, right here, right now. Okay, when you're ready, open your eyes. Yeah, doesn't that feel good? Dr. Ernest Holmes says, you can have as much good as you can take. We can call good love, peace, wholeness. But he says you can only take what you can embody. So it's very important to embody those things that we talk about, and to know that when the heavenly seed meets the earthly seed, they're not separate. I love to taunt Rocky a little bit, because Dr. Ernest Holmes, when he was a young minister, he said, we move to the absolute to the degree that we move out of the relative. When he got to be my age, he said, I was wrong. You don't move into the absolute to the degree that you move out of the relative. He said, the relative is the absolute at the level of the relative. So the earthly seed holds the divinity. It holds the heaven. It's not about separating this. It's about bringing it together and then inquiring, what is true for me now? So what if the pain is the portal for the peace, and the darkness is the doorway to the light, and the struggle is the doorway to the letting go, and to the illusion of control? We say, he thinks he has control. And in that moment, the one who thinks they're in control let's go. And then everything is added unto you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new life.